This presentation was inspired by Tom Davenport and of EPA Region 5, who has a great involvement in TMDLs, and I had a lot of help from Don Meals, also at Tetra Tech. We define uncertainty as a lack of complete knowledge when applying that to the watershed level, talking about prediction error. It's important in all phases of a watershed project, and I'll be talking about those a little bit. There can be many costs associated with not addressing the uncertainty in watershed management. These are some of those, leading ultimately in many cases to failure to achieve the water quality objectives, and then they pull your funding. I think everybody here knows what a TMDL is. It's basically the total load from point and non-point sources, a natural background that a water body can receive and still achieve water quality standards. Essentially, it's a pollutant budget. We use it today as a framework for discussing watershed uncertainty. This is a TMDL in equation form. Future growth, obviously, can be incorporated within the margin of safety. Margin of safety basically reflects our ignorance. There's uncertainty that in some cases, and Darren just talked about that, some of those cases where we can try to quantify it, there's some uncertainty where that is very difficult to do. The margin of safety, again, is there to help address that uncertainty. There are two approaches to the margin of safety. One is explicit, whereby, for example, your pollutant load would be, say, 80 tons. You might have a 10% reduction on that to make it 72 tons. Your 8-ton difference is then your margin of safety. That's explicit. Some would argue that this is more straightforward and defensible. Values in TMDLs for explicit MOSs have ranged from 5 to greater than 40%. People like it in some ways because it quantifies a planner's uncertainty, and it also provides a benchmark for measuring progress. Another approach is implicit, where conservative assumptions are used in the process of developing the TMDL. It's common to use a couple of these with the TMDL. Example, these are all related to bacteria, actually, where the analysis assumes wet years, assumes no die-off or a lower rate of bacteria die-off, doesn't assume any dilution. However, this can be taken to an extreme. We've seen TMDLs in Rhode Island, for example, where they're using 7 or 8 of these conservative assumptions, some of which don't make a lot of sense scientifically. Now moving on to the steps of a watershed project, starting with assessment. There's a great deal of sources of just environmental variability. These are some of those pointed out by Gilbert. Water quality criteria themselves add uncertainty. Basically, there's science we don't know, things we don't understand. And then there are things like relating indicator bacteria to pathogens. Darren has talked about monitoring, so whenever that comes up, I'm just going to click. Except in this case where we use surrogates like turbidity to look at suspended sediment concentration. Certainly there's a relationship. This is some USGS data, but in the relationships, you can see error is introduced. Also, in this case, there's a different relationship for each stream. Makes it a little hard to use on a broad scale. Again, this is and monitoring brings in uncertainty. There are issues regarding, now we're talking about assessment in terms of looking at the criteria themselves and then the broader sense of identifying problems in the watershed. In the monitoring for the broader assessment, Did it cover variability seasonally, diurnally, different habitats, et cetera? All of these aspects of a monitoring design will introduce some uncertainty in the assessment phase. Here's some data from Don Meals, bacteria data, E. coli, showing seasonal variation. There's the water quality standard for Vermont. Depending on when you go out there, you can come home with a whole different story. Assessment. You go from problem identification typically to cause assessment or identification. here's an example of Waukegan River, Illinois, a Section 319 monitoring project where they assessed, they determined that fishery impairments were due to habitat and sediment. So they went out and built a lot of things to deal with that. Made the fish come back, and then they were killed by the toxicity from the urban runoff. So they didn't identify all the stressors up front. There can also be temporary issues that may mask issues that are more permanent. Source identification. Identified your problem, your causes, looking for the sources. An example here, the Rural Clean Water Program from years ago when I was young. Garvin Brook, Minnesota. The wells they used for the assessment were yielding water 30 years old. It didn't help them much in their project. Oak Creek, another 319 project. They originally thought the bacteria in the creek were from recreational users. That wasn't true. They then tried to blame it on septic systems in the riparian zone. Not true. It ended up wildlife being the bigger source. A lot of uncertainty in identifying causes and sources. Also, it's important, and I saw a poster, Deanna Osmond had a poster about this topic a little bit, identifying the proper baseline conditions for land management. In the case of Cork Creek, they were assuming that crop production was a source of erosion, to find out later that stream bank erosion contributed more than half of it. And there are other cases like that. And question of when the assessment was done, how are people managing that land? Were they doing better because they're being watched? Were they doing worse because economic times were hard? There are issues like that bring in additional uncertainty. Target loads, lots of uncertainty there. If you're using MPDS data, you need to have a sense of what's being reported by the discharger. Are they giving you the actual concentrations or the permitted concentration? In their DMRs, are you getting the design, the permitted, or the actual discharge? They can be very different numbers. Source contributions, it's often hard to identify to characterize natural background. Baseline conditions can be tough, particularly if you're using historical data. The load calculation itself brings in uncertainty. Pete Richards, in some simulation work, identified a low bias at 35% for more than half the time. That's a big source of uncertainty. BMP performance, I think most of you here know that the performance of BMP varies considerably. This just illustrates that point. All good research, which ones are you going to use? Which values for your vegetated filter strips? Also, it's important to know the pre-BMP conditions. That's often not done well in watershed projects. Here's an example in Michigan where they assumed in the modeling that all the land was conventionally tilled. A review of that project proposal found that 65% of it was already under residue management. And so their conclusions about what needed to be done were off the mark. Lag time, another issue. Meals and Davenport and I published on lag time. That's how we define it. There are a number of sources of uncertainty brought in by lag time. We found a range of from less than a year to 50 years, depending on the particular situation. We all know about this. More flow is greater non-point source load. But when and where? Here's an example modeling, again, meals. They modeled phosphorus export over time. They imposed management measures, and then they kept those management measures in operation. That variability is all due to precipitation. Planning uncertainty, land use and management changes. Example, if you're shooting for ethanol, corn acreage goes up, CRP land goes into production. Things like that happen. E. coli outbreak, and spinach, where do you put the manure? Behavior of people is another big source of uncertainty in watershed projects. Pete Nowak has spent years addressing this issue. He's currently looking at a watershed in Wisconsin. Where basically it's kind of like a bad actor hypothesis. What they're trying to do is find out what makes these people behave the way they do and try to define solutions that incorporate that knowledge. And we all know technology changes. We learn things about practices we liked before and we say, oops, that's just part of the uncertainty. When you have mixed watersheds, you got urban sources. Infrastructures have issues. I come from Fairfax County, Virginia, and their stormwater management division has an awful lot of stuff they need to watch. Some of those things are going to have problems. We all know about short and long-term weather issues. Today's an election day. We know what that can bring. Economic pressures. We're now in an international economic scene. Things that happen overseas can affect your watershed. When being green is a good thing, we act differently. The Missouri SEEP example, Don Meals was there, saw the discussion, saw the farmers decide not to change their pesticide use because of what the manufacturer said. Prices of commodities can affect things as well. Economic downturns. Again, Fairfax County lost 50% of their budget for stormwater management. They still have all of that stuff to manage and more each day. Now, when you're assessing the progress, you still have the issues of monitoring that you had in assessment phase, but now you're detecting change. That's even harder. So the uncertainty is more of an issue. We don't know what is the cumulative uncertainty. I mean, Darren's taking a stab at it at his level. At this bigger level, it's even more of an issue. But we do think that you need to think about it. We have a few thoughts about what the story might be, but again, the margin of safety is where you're supposed to handle that. Again, you can't quantify all the terms. You can quantify some of them. Darren's root mean square error method is one of those ways. Our recommendations for dealing with uncertainty are to acknowledge it, make it clear up front you have it, prepare for it, do a better job in your assessment. The shellfish sanitation program is just one example of how you can do a more thorough assessment. Maryland has another example where you get a few high values, you don't just jump and go nuts and say we got a problem. You look further at the problem. Quantify uncertainty. Again, Darren talked about that a little today. Modeling. There are ways to, Monte Carlo. We believe that physical-based modeling needs to be supplemented by some sense of uncertainty due to the land management side, the people side of a watershed project. Establishing loading reduction targets, you might have, say, a margin of safety of, say, 15% if adaptive management is part of the process. But you want a bigger margin of safety if adaptive management isn't part of the process. Tracking water quality and land use land management to know what's going on are important things. One of the approaches that I guess I won't get into today because I'm running out of time is a minimum detectable change. It can help you design a monitoring program that has a greater likelihood of detecting the change that you expect in your watershed. And Gene Spooner of NC State has been a proponent of that for years. And there's the equation. I'll just skip through this. But basically, this analysis can give you these kinds of conclusions, that if you do weekly monitoring, you can detect 25% change. Quarterly won't do the job. And then accommodate it, use the best data you can, get a reasonable but not excessive margin of safety. Understand the lag time is there, adjust for it. And adaptive management is the key to this. A nimble and flexible planning and management approach to your watershed. Bring in the data, accept that there's going to be some uncertainty. Measure things to track where you are, make adjustments as a result of the data. Really quickly, EPA has a 9-key element approach that they use for Section 319 watershed projects that are addressing TMDLs. These 9 key elements, the last couple here, 8 and 9, include monitoring to track what you've achieved, and essentially. We believe that this is a good approach to reducing uncertainty. It doesn't eliminate it, but it's an adaptive management type process that relies on a good upfront assessment and monitoring to track results. We think that's a good way to deal with the uncertainty. So I think I'm done.
Okay. Thanks. Let's go ahead and hold questions. Sure. Until the discussion.